The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome to another episode of Kotaku Split Screen. It's October 13th, 2016. My name is Kirk Hamilton, and we have got a great show for you as usual. I'll be joined this week by my co-host Jason Schreier, who's taking a break from his sabbatical to come talk to me and the rest of you about video games. And we do talk about a lot of games this week. Jason talks about Dragon Quest Builders, a game that he really likes. I talk about Shadow Warrior 2 and Thumper, two games that I really like. We also talk some more about PSVR, which came out today, and at the end of the show, go in-depth with the first two episodes of HBO's Westworld, a very cool show that has a lot of video gaminess to it and will be a lot of fun to talk about. Stick around. We're back for episode 51. It's a very exciting day because we have a special guest, someone that I'm sure you've all totally forgotten and will be very excited to hear from, Mr. Jason Schreier. Hi, Jason.
Oh, man. I hope you haven't forgotten about me. I've been gone for so long.
It's been so long.
A hefty one-week absence.
Hearing your voice, it's like a blast from the past.
Yeah. It's old school.
Old school split screen. Like, people have been saying, man, I miss when Jason was on split screen. Those were the days. It's just not the same without him.
Yeah, man. It's like Dan Aykroyd coming back to SNL. Just the classic returning. Well, I am back. I am taking a break from my work sabbatical to do some more work and come and record an episode of Split Screen because I love you guys. And I love you, Kirk Hamilton.
I love you too, buddy.
And that's what it is. That's all there is to say. But it seems like Steven did a good job subbing in for me.
He did do a good job. He didn't give me enough crap about. He gave me shit about not playing an Assassin's Creed game instead of a JRPG. But it still felt about right. Like someone was berating me for not playing a game, which was what I need in a podcast.
Yeah, as long as there's someone here to make sure that. It's someone here to yell at you for not playing video games.
Yes, very important. I don't play enough video games. I think that's really the main problem that I have in my life. So
that's the crux of it. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
how are
things, Kirk?
Things are good on my end. I'm more curious about you. How's the sabbatical going?
Good. It's been crazy. I was just in LA for a week, visiting a bunch of game companies, and then I went to Vegas over the weekend, which was fun. I lost my life savings.
Wait, was that video game related, or was that just you're going to Vegas?
No, that was just for fun, because I spent the whole week working, so I just decided to go with some college friends and Amanda to Vegas for a night. Which is pretty fun, pretty weird city. Everything smells like smoke. Have you ever, so you played Fallout New Vegas, right?
Yes.
So just outside of actual Vegas is a town called Prim, which you probably know if you played Fallout New Vegas.
Yeah, I actually only know that from Fallout New Vegas.
Exactly, that's most people. But you go there and it's like, so on our way back, it's funny. So on Sunday, we left Vegas and we were trying to figure out where to watch the debate. Which we all wanted to watch on our way back. So we left Vegas at like 5. At first, we were talking about going to watch the debate at the Trump Casino because we thought that would be kind of funny. But then we decided, because we didn't know if it would be like Trump supporters there or what. And then we decided otherwise because we didn't want to have to like pay money at Trump's casino to buy drinks or food or whatever. And we didn't want to have to support him. So instead, we decided to go watch at Prim because it was kind of on our way back to LA on the drive back. And we figured we'd just stop and find somewhere. So we stop at a casino in Prim, and oh my god, it's like walking into the 60s. It's just like like this cloud of smoke. It's like so Prim is kind of this not deserted but like crummy version of Las Vegas. It's a few miles before you get to it's like 40 miles before you actually get to Las Vegas. So I like to imagine that it's, if you're real gambling degenerate kind of like I am, then you're driving from LA and you can't make it all the way to Vegas. You're like, I have to gamble, so you stop at Prim 40 miles before you get there. And yeah, you go in and it's just like really sad, like just depressing clientele and like really miserable looking people and clouds of smoke everywhere. I still like have this faint smell in my nose of that terrible casino. And we got there and we were there for a few minutes. I like went to gamble a little bit, play a little craps. But we
Was it
just
just, it
couldn't
was
deal
just,
with the
it
snow
was too
and the
much even
smoke.
for you.
Yeah, it was awful. So we wound up watching on someone's phone on our drive home, which went pretty well.
Yeah, it's about a, that's
It was a
probably
pretty ridiculous
a,
debate.
yeah, oh my God. Let's not even, it was
Yeah,
so
not even go
depressing.
there.
It was a depressing debate.
It's kind of hilarious. It's like, I don't know. I mean, hopefully after all this dies down, it forces the company to take a step back and look at the presidential election and be like, wait a minute, what are we doing exactly? How did we let things get to this point?
Yeah, it mostly just depressed me at this point. I thought it would be entertaining, but instead, my girlfriend Emily and I watched it together, thinking, "Oh, this will be funny, like it'll be exciting, or you know, we can't miss it." And by the end, it was just like, "Oh my God, I can't.
Yeah,
I just want
miserable.
this all to be over. This is such a mess."
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Can't wait. Yeah, in just a month it'll be over and President Trump will be in control.
Yes, and Dishonored 2 will be coming out, and
Yeah.
new Watch Dogs game. We'll have
Yeah.
a strong president who can protect our borders. So
Exactly.
we're going to be in great shape.
Exactly. So did you did do our weekly features
I did.
without
I
me
did your
last week,
NFL
right?
picks. I hear your NFL picks really panned out last week.
Yeah. Sure. All right, let's get those out of the way and then
Yep,
we can
let's do
talk
it.
about video games and shit. So first of all, weekly NFL picks. So when I first came up with this feature, I thought it would be fun and funny to pick the Jets every week and see if anyone noticed. But now the Jets are so bad that I feel like I can't even do that. So instead, I'm just going to make actual weekly NFL picks every week, which I
Oh
think could
wow,
be.
is already over.
The
We're getting
joke is, yeah,
serious.
it didn't work. It didn't work. The joke is too depressing. The Jets are just a disaster of a team with no secondary, and it's really sad. But at least they won't dash my hopes like at the end of the year. Like last year, they almost made the playoffs, and all they had to do was beat the lowly Bills in week 17 in the final week of the season. And of course, they just dashed everyone's hopes and had the worst game of their season and crushed all Jets fans. Like there's always, when you watch the Jets, it's always, you're just waiting for the time where they will disappoint you. And this year, they got it out of the way early, which is nice because I don't have to care that much for the rest of the season. Anyway, my weekly NFL pick. This week is, I'm looking at some lines right now. So I like the 49ers getting 9 points at the Buffalo Bills because Colin Kaepernick is going to play and the Bills aren't very good, and that's a lot of points for the 49ers. So that's what I'm going with.
All right.
49ers plus 9 at the Bills.
All right, solid picks. We'll see if that one
That's my weekly NFL
pans out
pick.
better this week.
Yeah, this will be fun. It'll be fun to make real NFL picks
Yeah.
while you have no idea what I'm talking about. And those listeners who watch football will be like, oh, okay. Feel free to email feedback and thoughts on NFL picks to splitscreen@kotaku.com.
Dear Kirk and Jason, please start an NFL-only
Can we do
podcast.
that? Do you feel prepared to
Oh
do
yeah, no
a
problem. I could talk for an hour about the NFL. No sweat.
no sweat. And as for our next weekly feature,
The Roomba
the Roomba
Report.
Report.
Not a
How's your
lot going
Roomba?
on with Hubert Humphrey, the Roomba. He's still doing very well. He's still cleaning the apartment. He still gets confused. The thing that I've
What does he
noticed,
think of Donald Trump?
he's undecided. I think he's still
Okay.
an
Like Ken
undecided
Bone?
voter. Yeah, it's a problem. I talked to him like, dude, how can you be undecided at this point? And he
Him and
doesn't.
Ken Bone can hang out.
Yeah, I guess he could put on a little red sweater and zoom around. The thing that I've noticed that he is doing lately is there's a little light that lights up on the back of the Roomba when the Roomba wants to go to the dock, and it's this dock light and it starts flashing. And there are times where I have him upstairs and he's really far away from his dock, but the dock light starts flashing anyways, and I'm not really sure why it's happening. And it's like he's saying like that he's tired or he wants to go home. And I always feel pretty bad. Like he's in the middle of cleaning, and I'm like, no, dude, you have to finish cleaning. Like I set you loose in this office, and I know you want to go back to the dock. I'll take you back when you finish, but you're not finished yet. And it feels kind of like I'm forcing my child to do his chores, which is basically what having a Roomba feels
You're like
like.
a slave driver, man. It's like a dog begging for treats, and you're just like, nope.
It's very well, you know what? It's actually it, and it makes me think of Westworld, which we're going to talk about a little bit later in the show, because I have this robot that I own that I'm sort of cruel to, or at least I force him to do my bidding because I own him. I paid a couple hundred bucks for him, and it definitely feels like an exploitative relationship, and it's made me question my relationship to artificial intelligence.
As it should. Well, okay, good Roomba report this week. Mm-hmm. For episode 51. I can't believe I missed episode 50.
Yeah, I was saying even to Steven that it was like technically not our 50th episode. Our 50th episode was like 5 episodes ago or something.
Because we've done a bunch of bonus ones, yeah.
Yeah, if you count those. We did a whole episode about Game of Thrones that I don't think had a number. But yeah, you missed it, man. You missed a big celebration. It was super fun. We had cake. I'm really sorry you weren't there.
Nah.
You sound so broken up over it.
Yeah, whatever. I'm doing cool shit anyway. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so tomorrow, Friday, I go to Poland.
Oh man.
And I will not say I'm kind of keeping things as far as the book goes. I'm not going to talk about it really a ton until next year, until people can actually pre-order and buy and read the thing. Mm-hmm. But I will say that I went to Game Studios in LA, and I'm going to a Game Studio in Poland, and people can guess where I'm going.
It's cool not to get more abstract about Poland. I'm curious what you will learn about Polish game dev culture. I just today wrote up impressions of another Polish studio. I'm like 90% sure they're Polish. The studio that made Shadow Warrior and Shadow Warrior 2 Flying Wild Hog, which is like Techland and CD Projekt. There's all these kind of really successful, very PC-focused game studios in Poland that do really good work. Like, their games are these very kind of meat and potatoes games with tons of stuff and like usually really good PC versions. It's interesting. There's a kind of a consistency to Polish game dev that I'm wondering why that is. So I will be interested to hear more from you after you go there.
I'll let you know. I'm going for 5 days, and I'll come back with all the answers. I'll be able to tell you this is why Polish game development works the way it does.
This is an explanation for Poland, you know.
Because they all eat pierogies, and it's really cold.
Right. And that just gets in your mind and makes you make video games a certain way.
Exactly. Nice. Exactly. But yeah, I mean, I'm not looking forward to the flight, because I have to fly 8 hours from New York to Helsinki, and then 2 hours from Helsinki after a layover, 2 hours from Helsinki to Poland, and then on the way back, like 2.5 hours to London, and then 8 hours to New York. It's just a mess.
Wow, that is
four different flights.
I'm flying tomorrow just to go to a wedding in Chicago, and I'm dreading that. So that sounds it's nowhere near as bad.
Yeah, well, you should download Dragon Quest Builders and play that on your
flight. Yeah, so this game is good, huh?
It's really good. Man, Dragon Quest, okay, so I just started playing it yesterday. Mm-hmm. I got a code from Square Enix, and I started digging into it. And so my original impression of Dragon Quest Builders was that it's just a Minecraft clone with, like, Dragon Quest skins and stuff, because that's how they kind of marketed it in Japan and from the beginning. But it's actually a way different game. There's a story, and there are quests and different chapters and NPCs that you recruit to come to your village. And if anything, like, the Minecraft element is there, and that you can destroy any block and pick it up and collect it and craft things, and that all element is there, and like everything looks really blocky and Minecrafty. But actually, it reminds me more of, like, I don't know, like a sim type game, like a Harvest Moony game, or like it kind of reminds me of ActRaiser in some ways, which is an old Super Nintendo game. But it's more of that type of, like, story focused, character focused game than Minecraft's just throw you in a simulation
so
box.
Is this a first person game like Minecraft? Or is it no? So third how does person. It? What does it look like? Like, how does it work exactly?
Well, the camera is actually a little annoying and finicky, but yeah, you have a zoomed out view of your character, and you walk around and you use them to break things and dig things and pick things up, and it's all from third person. I mean, it works really well. There's also monsters everywhere and action combat, and you can get equipment and swords and stuff, and it's all Dragon Quest themed, obviously. So it's like slimes and the hammer dudes and all the other archetypes that you see in all the Dragon Quest games.
All those famous Dragon Quest monsters.
Yeah, but it feels refreshing because it's very unlike Dragon Quest in that you're building a town and recruiting, like, going around and getting people to come to you and solving their problems, and they send you on lots of tasks to go, like, right now I'm on a task to go find a castle and learn how to make blockades so I can bring the recipe back and use it to defend my town from enemy invaders.
So there's, like, a town defense part of the game, like where you're building up defenses.
And, yeah, sometimes you're it's based on quests. It's not like you'll get randomly attacked and have to fight off, like run back to defend your town if you're out somewhere else or something like that. But you can there are various, like as you go through the game and solve all the quests and do all the various tasks that your villagers want you to do, there will be some where monsters evade and it's like kill these monsters before they, and they'll actually be destroying your walls and your rooms and stuff, and you'll have to repair it. Yeah, it works really well and it's like really addictive, man. I'm actually kind of looking forward to the flights because, well, I should be working on the flights, but instead I will wind up playing Dragon Quest Builders.
Yeah, so it's on Vita and
it's on Vita and PS4.
And PS4,
so you can play it on either. I don't think there's cross buy or cross play or anything like that because it's Square Enix and Square Enix likes to. Actually, wait, they did that. Oh, you know what they did? I think with Final Fantasy X, from what I remember, they did cross save, but you had to buy them both separately. Usually, Square makes it as difficult as possible to try to make as much money as possible from people by trying to sell you the same game twice or
Imagine
more.
Imagine that. What a It's an unimaginable practice in this modern video game age.
Exactly. It's really cool, man.
So it sounds like, from what you're describing, it sounds like it's not a simulation in the way that Minecraft is. Like, there isn't a simulated world just kind of going on around your town. Like you were saying, you don't get attacked, right? Like,
What do you mean by a simulated world?
Like how in Minecraft there's just stuff happening according to a simulation. They're just animals that turn up, or you just happen to find lava somewhere, or like there are just sort of things that happen. It sounds like it's more
story focused and structured. So the way it's structured is there are different chapters. I don't know how many there are because I'm still in the first one, but there are different chapters and each one requires you to save a specific village. So like in chapter one, I'm building this one village, and then chapter two might be on a different island somewhere and I have to go help restore that village. And it's got that kind of rhythm where it feels like you're saving the world like one town at a time, which is why it reminds me of ActRaiser. Did you ever play ActRaiser?
No, definitely not.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's kind of like that. It's kind of like a gradually go out. It's way better than Minecraft. I mean, Minecraft is cool as like a digital Lego type game, but this is more of like an actual, like there's a story and there are characters that are interesting and you have your village. I always liked it. It's kind of like Suikoden-ish in that you get to run your own village and recruit people to come join you. It's really appealing to me in all the ways that I like. And plus, unlike Minecraft, you don't have to feel that weird feeling of like supporting a game whose creator is a giant douchebag to everyone.
Or at least you know of. It could be that somebody who helped make this game is a giant douchebag.
But that's true, but it's less obvious. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, it's got, I like it a lot so far. I might change my mind if I hate it in 10 hours or so, but right now I've been playing it and I like it a lot. What are you playing?
Man, I'm playing a lot of things. I sort of stopped playing Destiny, so we won't really talk about Destiny on this podcast.
What do you mean? We literally played Destiny for 2 hours last night.
Yeah, but before that, I've sort of, and I'm not really playing today. Like, I played yesterday because you were on and other people were on.
Okay.
But, you know, it's like sort of run out of stuff to do, so I've had time to play other things. And I've just been sort of necessarily focusing on other things. The main game I've been playing is Shadow Warrior 2, which is out today on PC, and I have impressions going up in 38 minutes on Kotaku. So you're getting the advanced scoop, though I guess listeners will not. It's very good. It's a very good game.
So this is a sequel to Shadow. I never played the first Shadow Warrior.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a sequel to a remake, which the original game was a 3D Realms game that came out in 1997, which was sort of the, I think it's called the Blood Engine, but I might be wrong about that. It's like the Duke Nukem 3D era first-person shooter that was, I would say, probably not a classic, even though it was the era where games are thought of as classics. I didn't really play it that much when it came out. The remake is a completely different thing. It takes the main character and sort of updated everything. And the remake, it came out in 2013, was really surprisingly good game. I've always felt like I criminally undercovered it on Kotaku. I sort of played it a year late. I think I played it in 2014 and was like, whoa, this game is really good, and just never got around to writing about it.
Is this the game that they keep advertising by talking about Wang?
Yes. So the main character is named Lo Wang, and it's very...
Okay, so I have had no interest in these games whatsoever because all they do is send us emails about, like, who wants some Wang? And, like, Wang is back. And it makes me think that it's just some schlocky bullshit that I have no interest in.
So it kind of is. I mean, it is. It's... it's pretty schlocky, and it's pretty, like, the humor is very just like toilet humor. It actually really feels a lot like Deadpool. Deadpool did this better. Did you see the new Deadpool movie?
I literally just watched it a week ago.
Oh, you did? Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, Amanda and I watched it. We really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's a really funny movie. And like that, I talk about this a little in the article I wrote about this game, but it has that kind of a thing where the main character is this sort of really gleeful idiot who is constantly making jokes. And some of his jokes are actually really funny, like, and some of them aren't. So it's very hit or miss with the humor, but a lot of it's just a lot of dick jokes, a lot of toilet humor, constant quips, and he's just kind of a jerk to everybody, but in a sort of endearing way. It just doesn't do what Deadpool did so well, which is like there's this kind of vulnerability under the surface with Deadpool that you really get in that movie, and it kind of makes the love story really sweet, and it makes the jokes funnier, and the whole thing kind of works in a way that Shadow Warrior, so far anyway, for me, hasn't reached. But that's not the point of the game.
I mean, it helps that it's like an actual human being and that it's Ryan Reynolds, who's
right,
a good actor.
Right, and actually, like, the actor, I don't know his name, who plays Lo Wang, is, I think, pretty funny. And he was funny in the last game, too. But, the story is very secondary. It's even more secondary in the sequel than it was in the first game. The first game kind of had a really involved story. The second game is more of a Diablo-style deal, where you're, like, there's loot, and it's randomly generated. You're getting upgrades for, a billion different types of weapons. And you're going to all these different locations that are procedurally generated, and the like bosses have different colors, and like numbers fly off of enemies, and it's very like Borderlands 2 Diablo. There's up to four player co-op where you can go and like replay stuff and kind of keep upgrading your weapons and side quests. Like, it really has a very different
flow. Are you playing
from the
with other
game.
People or by yourself?
Mostly by myself. I played a little bit with I played some with Adam, our Destiny buddy, and now that the game is out, I'm sure I'll play with larger groups. It's fun in co-op. It's fun in both. The combat is just really good in this game, and that's kind of the whole focus of the game. Is it's a sort of a hard reset, Serious Sam style, like super super fast, super tons of enemies around you, and you're just shredding everything. It's super violent, and there's just blood and gore flying, and you have this sword or like a giant machine gun, and your guy is so fast. Like, it's the fastest, I'd say it's the fastest first person shooter I can remember maybe ever playing. It's faster than Doom. It's basically, to put it in Overwatch terms, your guy is a combination of Genji, because you have a sword. You also have machine guns, but it's kind of Genji meets Tracer, because you have this burst move you can do where you like launch yourself forward, and a double jump. So you can like jump into the air and then do the burst and then do another double jump, and you go flying, I don't know, probably like 100 yards without touching the ground.
You had me a Tracer.
So, and you have unlimited bursts. So you're so fast. You're just like flying around, guys. And it really works with a mouse and keyboard very well. I made that discovery about the first game. Like halfway through, I was playing on PC with a controller and thinking, okay, this is fun, but a little weird. But really, it flies with a mouse and a keyboard, because you can just turn so fast and like just get off sword moves on 100 different guys around you. And it's really fun. It was super refreshing for me. I was actually playing the opening of Mafia 3, which we can maybe talk about a little bit in a second.
Yeah,
but,
so it sounds like that's really disappointing, huh?
Yeah, well, that'll be an early pivot to Mafia 3, but it was disappointing, and I was a little like, oh, this is just kind of an open world game. Like, there's guys shooting at me from behind cover, and the AI is kind of bad, and I was like, ugh. And then I got code for Shadow Warrior and started playing that, and it was like immediately just totally balls to the wall, flying around, like just amazing combat. I was like, okay, this is more like something that I want to play right now. So I really like it. I think it's a really good game.
Okay, so wait, so Mafia 3, let's talk about that, because I was very excited for that because of all the talent involved with that studio, with Hangar 13, as we've talked about, a lot of ex-Star Wars 13 people, mm-hmm. and other talented folks, but it sounds like they made a mediocre game?
I think it's tricky. Like, I can't speak too much to it because I've only played like an hour. The hour that I played was...
I thought you had played more. Okay.
No, I played through like the first few missions, I guess.
Okay.
And talked to Nathan about it a lot. The consensus I'm seeing online is that it's a pretty mixed bag, which I guess is an easy kind of cliched thing to say about a game, but...
Yeah, you should be a game reviewer.
It'll please hardcore fans of the franchise, but...
Fans of the genre.
It feels to me, playing through the intro, it feels like a game from like 3 or 4 years ago. There's some really cool stuff, like the whole intro is framed as this documentary with flashbacks, and you'll do something and then it'll flash to somebody in the present talking about what you did in the past. Which is neat, and it's really well done, and the voice acting is good. And it's an interesting premise. Obviously, you're playing as this black guy who came back to New Orleans basically in the 60s, in the middle of, you know, civil rights after the Vietnam War. He came from Vietnam, so he's like a vet, and he's dealing with all this like really explicit racism. I mean, there's just everybody in the game is racist and is calling you horrible things. And it's very like, it deals with it very head on, and that's cool. Like, it's a really refreshing setting. But then the game itself is pretty boring. It was pretty boring for me anyways. Like, I just, you're in cover, you're shooting at guys, the AI seems really questionable. I was playing a stealth level that was just bad. I mean, I was like, the enemies were just stupid, and I was calling them over and just knocking them out, and I was like, this is just not fun at all. And I could tell, I could just see the game stretching out in front of me, you know, okay, so now I'm gonna have to go do a whole bunch, like, just do this another 50 times, because this is how these games work, and I'll gradually level up. And I was like, I can't do this right now.
I was reading some reviews, and people were talking about how there's no fast travel, so you just have to spend a lot of time driving from one place to another.
Oh, man. Wow, really?
Yeah, and how, like, there's a lot of just, like, tedious, like, Ubisoft-esque, mm-hmm. or, like, Assassin's Creed 1-esque nonsense that nobody really wants to deal with, which is too bad.
It seems ripe for it to have been really good. And considering the marketing push on this game, I mean, Jesus, I haven't seen an old school marketing push like that in years, I feel like. I can't remember the last time. Like, I really felt like for a while there, I would wake up every morning and there'd be a new email from 2K being like, Mafia 3 unveils new, you know, code word minigame or something. Like, it would just be some new video. And I was like, man, they seem really, at least really psyched about this game.
Well, Take-Two doesn't have Red Dead Redemption 2 this fall.
So they need something.
They
to
have
be
a
their
giant
big hit.
Open world gap to fill.
Yeah.
It seems like, it's too bad. It seems like they had some cool, ambitious ideas. I mean, yeah, when I hear about a game like this, I just envision like a development studio that is like, okay, we want to do all these really cool things with the story and racism and 1960s civil rights and all that. And then publisher executives being like, okay, it needs to have an open world, it needs to have these features, it needs to have 60 hours of gameplay, because otherwise people will just play it once and then return it to the store, and that sort of like marketing features like playing into it, which is
it just feels a little to me like there's, I mean, it's clearly a very ambitious game, and it feels just very unpolished playing it. Like, just there's just weird missing stuff. There are little things like, I don't know, a thing I notice is there's some cool scenes where you're kind of engaging in your local community, and you're serving people food at a sort of a community center, and you have to go serve everybody soup. And I went over to do it, and there's a line of characters waiting. And it's a cool idea, right? Because it's one of those mundane things that video games do well, where you serve someone soup and you have to press the button and they say something to you. They'll be like, oh, like, they'll remember that you're back, or they'll make some comment like, you know, all these people. And it kind of, it's cool. And it like, it gives a sense of the community, which I think is like an important part of what they're trying to say. And then, but also like, there's stuff like, I just stood there for a while and all the characters stood just ramrod straight and didn't move or say anything and just waited forever until I began serving them food, which is like, okay, fair enough. But it's the kind of thing where in a more polished game, you know, they would say something to you. There would be some kind of like, hey, I'm hungry. Like, are you going to serve me? Like, it's really little, and it's a lot to ask for, actually, because those kinds of details are very hard to do. But when they're not there, and that's just one small example, but when they're not there, you start to notice it, that the world just doesn't feel fully realized or
so it
finished.
Seems like it was rushed.
Yeah. And then obviously like the AI stuff and the bug, there's tons of bugs. If you've seen these hilarious bug videos of just people falling through the world and crazy artifacting going on that makes your guy look like the dude from The Darkness, like there's definitely the sense that the game is sort of unpolished.
So I'm looking this up. Okay, so I would say for an open world game, an ambitious open world game, a development team will need around 3.5 to 4 years, if not more, right, to make an ambitious open world game.
Yeah,
GTA
I really don't
5
know,
took
sure.
that long. Any like really great open, I mean, Red Dead Redemption took like 7 years, but any great,
yeah, well, and like
open
GTA 5
takes,
was like, that was like multiple Rockstar Studios crunching
right,
for probably
right, right,
like
right, right.
multiple years to get that game done. So
for some context, so I'm reading Wikipedia right now, and apologies if this is wrong because it's on Wikipedia, but This seems right. It seems like right information. So, Mafia 3 was first rumored to be made by 2K Czech in 2012, and then 2K Czech was restructured and closed down in 2004 in January 2014. Hangar 13, the developer of Mafia, was announced later that year in like late 2014. So let's give them the benefit of the doubt and said that they started pre-production. I assume they rebooted it because it's a totally different team working on the game.
Right,
Let's say
right.
they started pre-production in like mid 2014
Yeah, so
and
there
they
you
shipped
go.
in October. So that gives them 2 years, maybe even less than 2 years, to make this game. Any like you can't make an open world game in 2 years.
Yeah, I mean
And
that's a
if you
lot of
try
filling
to,
in
then
that's a lot of filling in blanks, but that tracks with the game. Like it that and
yeah.
it's which makes it kind of amazing that it's as, you know, polished and fleshed out as it is.
Right. I mean, what happens is you're trying to make an open world game in 2 years, you just don't have enough time to polish and bug fix and iterate as much as you would like to make sure that everything's working properly. So that's what we have here. And I feel weird talking about it, even though I haven't played it, but
Yeah.
based on the reviews and reception, that's what it seems like the case of like a game that was developed to hit a deadline rather than a game that was developed and given the time it needed to succeed.
Yeah. I'm sure I'll play more of it at some point. It's just there's other more fun stuff to play right now, and it doesn't feel very pressing to me.
Yeah, too bad.
Yeah.
That's too bad. And it's funny because Mafia 3 is a game I was really looking forward to and now I have no interest in. And Dragon Quest Builders is a game I had no interest in and now I'm loving.
So I feel like that's the narrative of this year. We've talked a lot about how 2016 is a really good year for games, and I've actually like halfway through the year I read this article being like this could be one for the record books, and now I'm feeling a little less that way, only because there have just been some big games that haven't been that exciting. Mafia 3 is one of them. Deus Ex was that way too for me. It was cool, but it was kind of, I was like, oh my God, there's going to be a new Deus Ex. Before it came out, I was so excited and really thought this was, because I loved Human Revolution. And Mankind Divided is like good, but like, it's not. And then Mafia 3 is like actually kind of disappointing. And it's starting to be like, ah, okay, like some of those really big things that I was excited about are sort of not great. And yet the narrative of the year keeps being, oh, the thing I thought wasn't going to be good or had never heard of is
Yeah, comes
amazing.
out of nowhere
Like,
and surprises you.
yeah, like, and the way that Hitman and Doom are both super good. Shadow Warrior 2 is less of a surprise, but it's really good. It's all these kind of under the radar things, or like
Stardew
less.
Valley coming
Yeah,
out of
exactly.
nowhere.
Stardew
And
Valley
like,
being great.
yeah. Yeah,
Yeah,
a lot of
so.
games came out of nowhere this year. Yeah, that's a good thesis for the year. Although I'm hoping that Dishonored 2 and Final
Right,
Fantasy
it really,
15
and
buck the
actually,
trend.
and Watch Dogs 2. I remain
And Watch Dogs 2.
optimistic about that game as much as I
Yeah.
didn't love the first one. And that
Yeah,
seems
yeah,
like
yeah.
if we just it's annoying to say that because honestly, like this many good games should be enough. But there's this feeling that like the year kind of needs one, at least one or two really like major huge things to actually be good. It would have been
Well, there are a
Persona
lot of
5,
potential
like.
ones.
Yeah, it would have been Persona 5 if Persona 5 hadn't been pushed, but
Yeah, Persona 5, yeah, that's February, yeah. Another game that kind of, well, it didn't come out of nowhere, but is still blowing my mind is Picross 3D2, which
Man,
is
yeah, I
so
gotta play
addictive
it.
and so good. Man, the reason you really need to play it is because, not just because it's an incredible game, but because it has a jazz soundtrack, and it is amazing. It's
Nice.
like, you might listen to it and be like, holy shit, this is the best soundtrack I've heard all year. It's really good. It's
Yeah, I gotta
really,
get
really
it. I
good.
gotta get it. I just, it's, yeah, I was talking to Steven about it as well, and it just sounds like a super good game. So, yeah, well, too many video games, man.
Yeah, Nintendo is really good at creating these little puzzle games that just are under the radar, eShop
Oh,
games that are incredible.
one video game that I have to tell you about that I wrote about this week, but we haven't talked about is, and but I want to tell listeners about is this game Thumper. Have you heard about Thumper?
I've heard people talking about it. It's a rhythm game, right?
Yeah, it is fucking good. It's really good. It's like a really brutal rhythm game, basically. They call it a rhythm violence game, I think, or musical violence. And it's basically you're just this like beetle on a track, and you're flying forward super, super fast through this. It's like a really, like abstract sort of hellscape, like this neon hellscape. And the music is, I can't remember the guy's name right now. It's two ex-Harmonic devs. The music is by one of them, who is the bass player in this sort of noise rock band called Lightning Bolt that are really well known. And the music is like industrial, just basically just drums. There's not really any harmony, or it's not like synthy, like a Rez game, or it doesn't have that kind of atmosphere. It's just like this brutal, like driving, just like boom, I'm like really, really pushing, and oh man, it's good. It's just like, it's tuned so well, and it's so readable and challenging, but like just brutal and precise. I really, really like it. It's, I just get in this trance when I play it, and I haven't had that feeling in a rhythm game in a really long time, actually. I kind of got burned out on rhythm games and was sort of like, all right, it's not that, I've played too many of these. There's so many, they all kind of look the same. This game, like, actually cuts through the noise. I'm really, really into it.
So, interesting. Yeah. Cuts through the noise.
It
literally.
Does. It, yeah, literally. I mean, it really does, like, musically do that, like, by being so, so brutal and hitting so hard. You feel like you're just playing something you haven't played before. Oh, there's, like, boss fights that are just crazy. These huge things are floating at the end, and it's, man, it's good. Definitely check it out. It's on PS4 as well. It's actually in PSVR, which is pretty cool. I think there's going to be, I mostly play it on PC, but so it's on PC and PS4, but really good game. If listeners are at all into rhythm games, I highly recommend it. That's a thumper. It's a good one.
And what else are you playing? Anything else?
Man, I played a bunch of PSVR games. Steven and I obviously talked about it last week. Played a bunch more. Yeah. There's other good ones. It's funny, all three of my favorite games are like rhythm, like kind of abstract arcadey rhythm games. So Thumper is one. Res Infinite, I think it's called, the Res VR version, is cool. It's just Res again, but it's in VR.
Just more Res, yeah.
But Res is good. And then the one game that Polytron helped out on, the Super Hypercube, which is also like another abstract arcadey game that's really cool and has really awesome. It's not exactly music, but the sound is really cool. So there's some good ones. It's, you know, I'm still kind of disappointed in PSVR and hope that it gets better, but I'm skeptical of the hardware. But I've been playing a lot of those games, which is very like play 5 minutes or play 20 minutes and then take a break, or like play a little bit and then go play another one. It's kind of like any launch, like hardware launch, where you have a million launch games that you have to play, and most of them are kind of eh, and there are a couple that are good, but you're moving through them so quickly that it's really hard to find time to focus. Yeah. And then it's doubly difficult because it's VR, which sometimes can make you feel like, give you a headache or make you feel dizzy or nauseous, or sometimes just you feel like you need a break. So it's even harder to kind of get your head around all of these different games. Or like one of the games will be, it'll be a horror game. There's this game called Here They Lie that's scary, and you know, it's full of jump scares and creepy imagery, and playing it in VR is like oppressive and kind of challenging, which it's supposed to be. But if you're in the middle of like running a gamut through a bunch of review games, and then suddenly this one is like got these scary giant hogs standing in front of you covered in blood, and you're like, ah, Jesus, like I just can't, you know, so it
give me a fucking break, man.
Right, like, yeah. Can we just like move cool puzzle pieces into, you know, and line them up and make neat music play. So it's, you know, it's been a lot of that, like the last couple of weeks. Just
yeah,
sort of
geez, I can't even
games.
Imagine. I get so nauseous and like dizzy when I put on a VR headset for more than 15 minutes. I can't imagine reviewing it.
It depends on the game. But, you know, there are a few that definitely, especially with PSVR, because it's constantly got this weird tracking issues and shifting going on. It just contributes to this low level discomfort that I'm like, all right, I can't anymore.
But so we're still not at the point, I mean, even with PSVR and this batch of games, we're still not at the point where it's like there's one experience that everyone's like, you have to get a VR headset for this thing.
Right. I mean, I think that I don't know what it'll
be. Especially since you can play a lot of these without VR, like Thumper.
Yeah, some of them, yeah. Or, I mean, the thing with PSVR is honestly just that the hardware is not...
It's not there yet.
It's not as good as the other hardware.
Yeah, I'm curious,
hardware.
So when are we getting, like, PS4 Pros, or is Sony sending us those?
I don't know. I'm not actually sure what the deal is. Okay, I would imagine soon, you guys will have one in New York at the very least.
Yeah, because I'm curious to see if it runs way better on the PS4.
I think the
Pro.
Games will run better, but the main issue, as far as I can tell, is the camera and the Move controllers are just, like, really old hardware.
Yeah.
And those, there's no, I don't think that a faster console will really make much of a difference with that. But we'll definitely see. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, they must be working on new versions of that stuff.
Right, which is annoying. Well, it's funny. It's annoying. Yeah, I'm sure there'll be, like, Touch 2. If it's successful. And then you have to buy more crap. And then, right, you have a bunch of... You bought a Move and a camera for this thing that are already obsolete, which would be very typical, and it would not surprise me. Well, and did you see... I don't know if you saw this, that Valve is already showing with HTC a new Vive controller that they're talking about, because Oculus is going to release their new touch controller, which I think is
likely going to be better than the Vive controller, but now the Vive is going to have a new one. So they're literally announcing a new controller for this thing that people bought like 5 months ago for $800. And they're like, oh, yeah, here's some new controllers. They're way better than the ones you have. Those are garbage. Throw those out.
I mean, it's just like, it's just not smart to be an early adopter with any of this.
Yeah, this is especially, this technology is very, it's just all feels very early adopting.
Just which wait. It's like buying an iPhone in the first year. Like, wait 2 or 3 years for like the actual, like for them to iterate enough where it's at the point where it's like, okay, this is the real, like iPhone didn't really hit its stride until 3, right?
I think
like the 3G
one sounds right. Yeah, the 3G one with the plastic bag.
Yeah,
I mean, and that's, you know, it's, that's generally the advice I give too. If you have a lot of money or you don't care or you really want to check it out, sure, whatever. Like, follow your bliss. But yeah, I mean, it's becoming clearer and clearer that in the next few years, there's just going to be new versions of all of this stuff that are all way better. There was an Oculus press conference that generally not very cool, kind of cool. Like, there was a lot of interesting messaging. Like, there's a lot of diversity messaging.
Week?
Yeah, this was last week.
Was Palmer Luckey there?
No, he didn't turn up. And there was a lot of stuff about like diversity initiatives and funding, getting women into programming and making VR. It was very like the company was like, look, we're going to show you more of what our culture is actually about and not this kind of guy who did his own thing. Which was neat, but it was also very like boring and press conference-y, and VR press conferences are also just like awkward fundamentally because a lot of the demos involve someone standing on stage wearing a fucking Oculus Rift looking kind of like a gomer while you watch this thing on screen and everyone's supposed to be excited, but it's just like, you know, video game press conferences are awkward enough when you can see the face of the person demoing the game. So when they're wearing VR, it's even harder to really get a sense of what's going on. But it was cool. They showed some cool stuff. And this guy, Michael Abrash, do you know who that is?
He used to work at Valve.
Yeah, he's the guy from Valve who's now, like, I think his title is like head scientist. And I had never seen him speak before, but he talked and he was great. He's really awesome. It reminded me a little bit of Carmack's old QuakeCon keynotes. It was just this really enthusiastic, technical, just nerdery about the possible futures of VR. And it was a lot of him talking about like the uncertainty and the things they don't know how they'll work yet. There was a lot of this sort of confident uncertainty that I really liked, just him being like, look, yeah, we haven't solved all these problems yet, but we are definitely going to. And he talked about some really cool shit. Like, he was talking about, I can't remember the term right now, but like basically making the image show a high resolution at whatever you're looking at, but lower resolution all around you, like following your eyes, basically, so that it doesn't have to render an entire image at whatever extremely high resolution it would need to be to make VR not seem all kind of blurry like it is right now. So it's the idea is that they can create software that will render reactively to your eye movement. And it's like, you know, they're totally not there yet, but that kind of technology, I'm like, wow, that sounds super cool. And it was just, it was really neat. And he was really funny. And like, it was a great, just one of those times when a guy who's just clearly extremely smart is talking about really advanced things, experimental things that they're trying. And it was really neat. So
the real question will be, when can they create a VR device that doesn't require you to put a fucking giant set of goggles on your forehead?
Yeah, that is a question. Yeah, the first question is, how can you not have wires attached to it? I think they're still trying to solve that one, but at some point, it'll be.
One day.
Yeah, we'll see.
But yeah, I saw your PSVR review, and yeah, it seems like the verdict is, do not buy this thing.
That's my verdict. Other people really like it. Some people have been way more kind to it. I can't really get around, you know, I'm just skeptical about a lot of things, a lot of the stuff we talked about last week. But
as you should be.
Yeah.
As you should be. Hey, let's do a reader question.
Yeah.
And then we can talk about Westworld.
That sounds good.
So let's see. Let's do Isaac's question. I like this one.
Okay.
Okay. I will read it. Hey guys, says Isaac. Now that we've talked about Destiny for 2 weeks, I hope I can derail you with a question about the society that has evolved in the video game community. I consider myself an avid feminist as well as an equal rights advocate. I'm in approval of LGBT rights and the general progression of the world towards greater equal opportunity and rights. But when you have any opinion that defends that point of view in gaming spheres, you get the insult of SJW thrown at you. Why is that a bad thing? What is wrong with being someone who is a social justice warrior? Saying that to someone is sort of like short-forming, you politically correct person who treats people kindly and fairly. Is that such a bad thing? How is this the culture that has developed around us, and how can we go forward in the future preventing this from occurring? Sorry about the relatively long email, but I would love to hear your thoughts. Thank you for the question, Isaac. Just a reminder, if you want to send us questions to be read on the show, we are at splitscreen@kotaku.com. And we are all social justice warriors. Kirk, what do you think?
Well, it's funny, right? It's a funny insult because, right, I think a lot of people have made this point that calling somebody a social justice, being like, yep, okay, I care about social justice, that's not a bad thing. Like, social justice as a concept
Well,
just
I think it's supposed to... I think the insult is meant to be facetious. It's of course. Yep, look at you, social justice warrior.
Right, so on its face... it's obvious being like, well, yeah, I like care about treating people equally and you know, more equally and making up for the various inequalities and systemic oppression that happens in our society, et cetera. And, you know, yeah, that's like a good thing. That it's pretty obviously good, I would say. So telling someone that they do that and treating it like an insult doesn't make sense. But, you know, there's a lot of layers to like that insult. I don't think that there's a way to say, oh, well, if we only explained this better, it would stop this conflict from happening, and it would, and the video game culture wars would end, and everybody would stop being angry about this stuff. you know, I try to understand it and understand the language around it just because that's helpful. But really, all you can do is do what Isaac is talking about, and, you know, like, consider, be a feminist and an equal rights advocate, and like speak up when you see bullshit happening. And that's, mm-hmm. I'd say, more important than worrying too much about people who are going to yell at you and call you an SJW for it. Though the thing that always has struck me about political correctness as as an insult is that the sense I get is that a lot of times that it's used as an insult because it's being viewed as sort of disingenuous. People are saying you don't really care about equality or about helping people. This is like a front that you're putting on. You're being politically correct. Like it's mm-hmm. not because you think that women should be paid the same as men and that, you know, whatever, like systemic racism shouldn't keep people in danger or like, you know, anything like that. It's because you think that it's the right thing to say and you want people to view you as a good progressive, which like is a really tricky thing to counter because it's sort of like undermining your entire motivation for something that you really believe, assuming you really mm-hmm. believe it. And that, it's not really
in some cases it's true.
Yeah, I mean, I think, right, of course. I think it is, and it can be.
In some cases, it is very performative. But right. That's an interesting point. Well, I think also, I think that, and I've always tried to, even though I consider myself to be pretty progressive, I think both of us are, I've always tried to like understand where different people are coming from. And I think that the kind of hatred of political correctness, some of it might come from believing that PC people are false. Some of it comes from thinking that like, so quote unquote politically correct people take things too far and find kind of reasons to get upset about things that maybe aren't really battles that aren't worth fighting in those people's minds. And I don't know, like you said, there are a lot of layers to it. It's not as simple as just like, I don't know, I've always felt like people who actually like unironically use the word SJW are generally flagging themselves to be giant pricks. And like, if you look at the rest of their internet history, it's just like pro-Trump, like Nazi, yeah. Alt-right, just the same crowds that you see all the time. Now they're identifying themselves by putting like deplorable on their Twitter handles and using Pee Pee the Frog as their avatar and stuff like that. It's all part of one culture. But that said, there's also certainly an argument to be made that like when people are getting angry and kind of waving the flags or like starting to pick fights and Twitter brigade against little things and lots of little things, and every day it feels like there's something to be angry about, that like it's like shooting yourselves in the foot almost. And I don't think that like when you go on Twitter every day, and there are definitely people who are like so-called progressive people who are on Twitter every day just angry about various things, mm-hmm. it's kind of, I don't know, I can see why that would rankle people. And I'm saying this carefully because I am a white dude who's on a podcast talking to another white dude, and I can't really understand what it's like to be someone who's part of an oppressed class and someone who's a minority and someone who might have the reason to get outraged about things all the time. But it also feels like there's an element of like battle picking, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, the idea that
outrage culture. You know what it comes out? There's one example that always stood out to me is the, do you remember the thing that happened a few months ago with the new Paper Mario game and people being like, oh my God, it's a Gamergate reference, and like freaking out over that. And within a few minutes, it was very clear that it was not a Gamergate reference. And it was kind of like two images extrapolated from the game and put next to each other, even though they weren't actually next to each other in the game. And a lot of people just taking it out of context and getting really angry. And I think our social media culture has kind of created this culture where it's easy to get outraged about things, or at least put on the performance that you're outraged about things. And it makes it harder for your average person to know what is real and what they should really care about. Mm-hmm. So like the term white privilege, for example, has kind of turned into a punchline, even though it's a very real thing that like white people should be aware that they have advantages over minorities and people of color that they wouldn't have if they were black or Asian or whatever. And that's a very real thing. But just because it's used so often and has turned into this kind of like pejorative because so many people just use it for so many different things, it's the point is diminished, unfortunately.
Yeah, on the language point, like a lot of the language around these sorts of things has become so loaded you almost can't use it just because it derails conversation.
It's like, you know, problematic.
Yeah, or talking about trigger warnings or putting in a trigger warning. It's like such a debate unto itself that using one is almost taking a stance, which is too bad because it's a useful thing on its own. The thing you're talking about with social media just makes me think of a really good article that Gia, is it Tolentino? Is that her last name? For Jezebel before she's at The New Yorker. She wrote this amazing thing called No Offense that was just this, I couldn't even hope to summarize it. It was so good. I hope you can go Google it. It's just Google Gia, J-I-A, Jezebel, No Offense. It's an extremely good essay just about like internet and outrage and offense and being a feminist and writing for a feminist website or a woman's website. And one of the things she talks about is the way that social media encourages reaction to reaction instead of actually engaging with the source material, which is super true. If you think about how you see something shared on Facebook or Twitter, you'll see a link with a headline and maybe a lead, but above it, you'll see what the person thinks a lot of the time. They'll be like, oh, this, you know, or whatever, like read this and, you know, reflect, or like so-and-so nails this and this and this. Yeah, and so you already are...
Yeah, performance.
Right, well, and you're already reading, right? It's like fundamentally that way because of the structure of social media. You're reading somebody's reaction to the thing before you've read the thing. You have to in order to get to it. And then, of course, you know, maybe you share that tweet and say your reaction to their reaction, which then is, you know, you're getting so far removed from the original thing. And that leads to just a lot of sort of reaction... like exponential growth of reaction, and it winds up being just a very reactionary place in general. There's a lot of people reacting to other things, and so that can lead to a lot of language becoming sort of simplified and losing its meaning. It's one thing that's happened to SJW, to circle back to Isaac's question. It's something that's happened to a lot of different terms, and you know, things that just kind of shut down conversation are more like dog whistles or flags that indicate things, and that's kind of what SJW is too. And you know, like, it's just, it's a mess out there. I definitely don't know what the solution is other than to speak, be very clearly, be careful about
how the culture wars started in video games 2 years before they ultimately turned into a national issue, and now they've gotten to the election, and now the election is literally a culture war.
It's funny that
it started with games.
Well, and it's that Kyle Wagner, that kind of joint Deadspin opus, we've seen the future of the culture wars, and it's Gamergate, I think was the headline, was really on point. I mean, it has proved itself true over the years to follow, I think, generally in a kind of shitty, stressful way, but it's definitely been accurate.
I feel like despite feeling sometimes like I see people progressive folks, super progressive folks, like wanting to pick battles all the time and like kind of finding outrage in trivial things or things that seem trivial to me, despite that, I don't think there's like that can be healthy. It can be healthy to have that element of like really radical people who are challenging the status quo in every way. And I think that one of the problems with the like Gamergate types and people who are anti-SJW or whatever is that they tend to take everything literally, and they don't take the time to like try to critically process and look at something and be like, okay, I disagree with this, but I'll just move on with my day. And their tendency is just to get equally outraged about, and like also be doing the exact same thing, except on the opposite side, where they're just looking for things to be outraged about from the feminist perspective. So it's like this progressive gets mad because this video game shows a woman in a in skimpy clothing, and instead of the Gamergate type people being like, okay, whatever, I don't care, I'm just going to play it anyway, they freak out over the radical progressive who would dare to criticize their video game. And it becomes this never-ending back and forth where really, like, there's nothing wrong with criticizing games, and if someone is like, I don't like the skimpy clothing, then the person who wants to play the game should just fucking deal with that and play the game, because there's nothing stopping them. And there's kind of this conflation of criticism and censorship, and the people on the right side of things, oh, like, seem to believe that when Anita Sarkeesian goes on YouTube and criticizes all these feminists, these games, and says they should do more things to promote women's equality, that that's going to lead to censorship. But somehow we have
when you
not
say when you say the people on the right side, you mean you don't
the
mean
right
the correct
wing,
side.
The right wing yes. side.
No,
the
I figured I was just making
the
sure
reactionary
that,
side of things, the Gamergate
that
side of things. But like somehow 2 years after Gamergate, we still have not seen a decrease in the number of titty games from Japan. So I feel like they're doing okay. And I don't know, it feels like anyone who's trying to demonize conversation and make it so fewer people criticize games and fewer people want to talk about what games do well and don't do well, that is a travesty to me. Like, anyone who wants to really, those people are censoring or looking to censor criticism, which is a serious problem and is a lot more fascist than any feminist critique you could find on the internet.
Yes, I
as
agree.
Much as
I think that's very well put.
Yeah, and it's like Anita Sarkeesian sometimes says ignorant things and things that I disagree with and I'm sure you disagree with, but there's nothing wrong with it. Like, it's who cares? It's not going to affect our lives. It's not going to affect
Well,
games.
and
it's
in
not going
general, I
to
mean,
stop.
And the more smart people, like, I think Anita is very smart, and I really like a lot of what her work. And like, the more smart people that are out there actively engaging in games, the better, as far as I'm concerned, especially as someone who's primarily in the business of talking about video games. Like, I would rather the conversation were better, and smart people make the conversation better.
So, I mean, ultimately, to answer Isaac's question, I mean, yeah, to prevent this, to stop this culture war is something that is beyond our power, where we would have stopped it a long time ago. We were in there in the trenches in the beginning, watching it
If only
unfold.
we had
And
just pressed the turn off button
yeah,
and
I'm
turned
surprised
that
Donald
off.
Trump hasn't tweeted anything about Gamergate. You would think he would.
Yeah, it could still happen. It's
It
gonna
could
be
still
a
happen,
pretty wild month, I think.
yeah.
We'll
Maybe it'll
see.
come up in the next debate.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this has just become a polarization of America, and it's tough to deal with because it's the people who are claiming to hate reactionaries are reactionaries themselves and looking for anything to be outraged about and looking for any Kotaku headline to freak out over or looking for any Anita Sarkeesian video or like Zoe Quinn tweet or whatever to just throw a hissy fit over, and
Yeah,
that's too bad.
it's very easy to feel powerless. It feels like it spins itself up, like it's a thing that moves on its own momentum at this point, which can make me feel, a little powerless to do anything, which actually is freeing in a way, because I think, all right, well, I'm just going to try to be cool and, do what I believe and, keep going, and hopefully that's enough.
I mean, yeah. And then the so I'm rereading Isaac's email to myself. So Isaac says he considers himself to be an avid feminist as well as an equal rights advocate. And I think that one of the big conversation points regarding around SJWs, quote unquote, is whether video games need to have progressive critiques and whether like sexual like like the representation of women being suppressed or women not having agency and the lack of kind of equal rights in video games, whether that translates to the real world, which to me always seemed like kind of a weird stance to take. Like the anyone who claims that video games have no effect on us is kind of dumb. It's
It's
kind
just
of a
and like it's like any art, right? It's just like you can
exactly.
engage art with on any terms you want to engage it on. If you want to talk about this, like make social commentary about what it says and how it reflects the culture that created it, like, sure, of course. That's some of the most interesting film criticism, looks at when a film came out, you know, a film from the 80s or the 70s, and talks about the climate in America and like what was happening in Hollywood then and how this movie got made, because art is always a product of the culture that creates it. Like, that's
exactly,
of course, a valid like line of reasoning. And, you know, you can or you cannot engage in things that way. But right, it is a weird reaction. I think, like, there's a lot of, it's funny, it's the way that people talk about, oh, like, you're gonna, if you critique this, you'll change the games, and that the censorship thing is tied to this idea that there needs to be some tangible outcome from criticism, which I've always sort of fundamentally disagreed with. I think criticism exists for its own sake and for enlightening your reader. And so I've never really felt like there needs to be a tangible outcome. And it's actually similar to review scores and Metacritic and bonuses and all that, because that also is a thing where people will say, oh, well, my review was the one that cost these guys money. Like, it made a difference. My writing, like, affected things. And yeah. I understand why you would want to feel like something you wrote made an impact. I know you've done journalism that's had an actual impact on the world. And that's a remarkable thing to be able to do that, especially if you make change for the better. But criticism, at least to my eye, generally doesn't aim to do that. I don't anyway, as a writer. I don't need to change things. I'm happy just writing something that people read and it helps them think differently about a game, or it's funny, mm-hmm. or, you know, interesting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's when it's like people are always extrapolating it out to these real world repercussions for your writing or your video or your criticism that I guess is a, you know, you can do what you do for whatever reason, but it tends to make things get more heated very quickly, because suddenly it's real and it has an effect, instead of just, oh, it's all just people talking and ideas and,
yeah,
you know, which, yeah, is much less
that part is part of it. And then the other part is whether people playing games are directly affected by the violence or the sexism or any other,
like, right, which, as you found, is like extremely inconclusive at best. Like, yeah, what no, we even know about that. So.
But that's a different thing. Well, so the question is, I mean, one of the big questions in like Gamergate circles is, why are people criticizing the sex or sexism in video games when they're just video games and they're not going to make people who play them sexist? And I've always felt like that playing a video game isn't going to turn you into a woman hater, but it's definitely going to have impacts on the way you look like you look at life, because any piece of art is going to have impacts on the way you look at life, because we don't play these things in a vacuum. So that seems like a very flawed argument. It's sort of like the whole keep your politics out of my games thing, which is dumb, because there's no such thing as a piece of art without politics. Like you said, no video games are created in a vacuum. They're always like kind of colored by the circumstances and the political climate and the messages that the creators want to send. So there's no such thing as a video game without politics. I mean, even Tetris is a video game about politics. Like, that would not exist without Soviet Russia and the climate of the Soviet Union at the time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's always been kind of a strange thing to me, and I hope that one day video game culture gets to the point where it's okay to voice any sort of criticism about games without having to worry about reactionary gamers.
I think it'll get better. I mean, your website. We're seeing the same thing happen in, you know, movies and I don't know so much about music, but in movies and in comics and elsewhere, like, it's a lot of the same conversation. So but there's also just a lot more established, you know, critical avenues in film, for example, and I would imagine that over the next 20 years or so, that'll become more true of games. One can hope, anyways.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right, we're almost out of time, but let's talk about Westworld.
Okay, let's talk about Westworld.
And thanks for your smart question, Isaac. That's a good question, and an interesting subject to talk about, and we should talk about more often on the show. Okay, Westworld. So should we spoil the first two episodes of Westworld?
Yeah, so we've watched two episodes each. This is the new HBO robot.
Well, there only
Western
are two episodes.
Show. Right. We've watched the only two episodes that have been out. And yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that anybody who wants to listen to this part will have seen them. So we'll just talk about it a little bit.
Yeah. So spoiler warning, if you haven't watched Westworld, go and watch it and then listen to the rest of the show.
Definitely go watch it.
It's really good. If you're into games, you will like this show.
Yeah. So yeah, good show, right? Pretty video gamey show.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically Red Dead Redemption 2, right?
I have a feeling that, yeah, watching it, I was like, man, it's going to be weird playing Red Dead Redemption 2, because I'm sure it'll come out after the season is over, having watched this show and thought about it so much, because it's so Red Dead Redemption-y.
what if the season ends and then Red Dead Redemption 2 is announced, like in the season finale? That's the big twist.
Oh, I wonder if, and I feel like Red Dead Redemption could do so much, like Rockstar could sneak Easter eggs in there or something, have people like say, what is it, these violent games have violent ends when you, some malfunctioning NPC Easter egg that you
find. Man.
Yeah. So what it's cool. Show, yeah. I'm really
well written.
I agree. I just rewatched the first two episodes since I knew we were going to talk about it. And I recommend rewatching, especially the first episode, because I thought the first episode was very disorienting, like on purpose. There's a lot of ambiguity about who's human and who's not. And, you know, they do the whole beginning is this whole big fake out where you think, what's his name? The guy on the train is the human, and he's a guest because they segue to him. Do you say James Marsden?
Yeah, James Marsden.
Right. They segue to him. No, is it Jimmy? Do they call him Jimmy? It's something like that.
No. The actor's name.
Oh, yeah. I don't know the actor's name.
I'm looking at him.
It's like Terry. He has a kind of like a name. That
yeah,
doesn't...
it's James Marsden. I was right.
Oh, that's funny because isn't John Marsden? Isn't that that's the main character of Red Dead Redemption?
John Marsden. Yeah. That's
interesting.
Funny.
So it's funny also because that in his introductory scene. First off, they segue to him as someone says something about. The guests, the human guests.
Yeah.
And it makes you think he is one. And also, it's really similar to the intro to Red Dead Redemption. If you remember, he's asleep on a train. And there's like women sitting in front of him talking about stuff. It's super the same. It's like shot really similarly. And you're thinking, oh, okay, like this guy is living out his fantasy. And then, of course, it turns out, no, he's a host. And they've programmed him to have this whole relationship with Dolores. And they do this whole big fake out. And then the whole rest of the show felt that way to me. The first episode, I just spent the whole time getting my bearings and thinking, okay, like, is this person a human? Is this person not? And then they'd kill them, and I'd be like, okay, well, so that's a host because they got murdered, and then they wouldn't, you know, someone else wouldn't die. So watching it a second time made everything make a lot more sense. Especially actually the big gunfight at the end, the paint it black sequence where that guy Hector shows up and like is killing everybody. I was the first time through, I was like, okay. I didn't put it together. I just didn't
fully put it together.
Which it makes sense, actually, if you watch it. Like, they show him, and you know he's, like, the bandit that the one guy's been hunting the whole episode. And then he shows up, and they talk about how they're moving up the timeline for that. So they can, like, it all adds up.
So they can
up.
Clear out all the
right, because they need
parts.
To pull out, right, all the updated hosts.
Yeah.
But, yeah, watching it again, it just makes that scene a lot more fun. It's, like, really funny and, like, great, and his whole vibe of just being this ultimate badass is really good. And I love how he's about to give the big speech, and the writer is, what's his name, Sizemore, is so juiced up. And then, like, this idiot guest just, like, shoots him in the neck.
Shoots him, yeah.
Which just is
such
a... You
know that's Paulow from Lost?
You told me that, so I know that. But it was just such a video game thing. I don't know. I feel like you see the writer watching that happen, and he's like, fuck. And then she kind of makes fun of him. She's like, oh, maybe next time. And it just makes me think of
It's like a video game developer watching someone on Twitch, like, not discover.
Like, failed, right, or, like, skip cutscenes, or, like, you know, like, start shooting when people are still talking and, like, ruin the script that they spent so long writing. It was so that. And
so good.
Yeah, I feel like,
man, what a good show. Yeah, it's such a video game show. Clearly the makers, is it Nolan? Is that who it is? The Nolan brother?
And
Jonathan
Joy.
Nolan?
Yeah, Jonathan Nolan and his wife, Lisa
and
Joy,
wife.
I think. And
so
yeah, they even talked about it.
Like, into games.
Yeah, when they talked about it at Comic-Con, I mentioned this. I wrote an article about this earlier this week. And they were talking about how they both really like BioShock, and how he even said, it was a really funny exchange, he said... and my wife is the most boring Grand Theft Auto player ever. She follows all the rules, and she stops at stoplights. And she's like, well, but it's really beautiful if you slow down and take the time to look, which is so perfect and really actually encapsulates, I think, a lot of the like game design philosophy of the show, which is sort of the difference between, do you want the action and the violence, and do you go into Grand Theft Auto 5 to blow up as much shit as possible? Or do you play that game to walk and enjoy just how beautiful and amazing this world is? And it's kind of one of the fundamental disagreements the people who run Westworld on the show are having about their own sort of theme park, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, man, such a cool concept. So this is based on a Michael Crichton book, right?
And which was made into a movie a while ago. And it's sort of... as far as I know, I haven't seen the movie, but and the whole thing was kind of an early draft that he reused the concepts for Jurassic Park. You can see a lot of Jurassic Park sort of in Westworld, right? Like the guy Ford is kind of a very John Hammond kind of character. There's this question of what are we doing and what are the ethics of it? And clearly the park is going to turn on the visitors.
But even just the fact that it's called the park,
that it's about an extremely expensive, amazing amusement park. Like, it has some of the same DNA, which makes sense. But from what I gather, the movie, I think, is just much more straight up sort of action thriller. I think it's just like the robots turn evil and the main characters are the humans trying to get out. Where the show, the new show, is kind of done what Battlestar did, actually. About the Battlestar remake, by, you know, the original Battlestar Galactica was much more like people in space, like fighting robots. And the sequel was way more like the robots actually have a legitimate grievance and are like people. And actually, it's going to become this whole really complicated, almost religious, like, you know, philosophical debate between what life is and who, you know, treats whom how. And this movie or TV show seems like it's kind of started at that same place.
Yeah, I just hope they don't go full Lost and fuck everything up.
So watching it, so I want to talk about a few theories, because I started reading fan theories about this show, and rewatching it, I started to notice things. And there are clearly, the sense I get, actually, it made me less worried that this show is going to turn into a Lost situation where we're in the middle of the second season and there's still just like ridiculous shit being revealed, and we realize that we didn't know anything for the whole first season, because actually they're all androids, and this, you know, the show itself is a simulation within another simulation. But it's not, you know, if they start doing that stuff, they'll probably lose me a little bit. But the sense I got actually rewatching it was that this is actually being very tightly written and has a really clear loop going on. And it mainly centers around so there's this big theory about the Man in Black. And I know I told you some of this theory, but I'll tell listeners, who I'm sure if you're listening at this point, you probably know it. But the idea is, so in the second episode, we meet William and I can't remember his name, Logan or something, his friend. And William is a newcomer who is coming to the park for the first time, and he picks a white hat. So he's maybe a good guy. And we just sort of see him arrive and go around Sweetwater, the little town, and he meets Dolores at the very end. And so we're kind of meeting, we see the park. It's more a conventional thing, right? See the park through the eyes of someone who's coming for the first time. And then simultaneously, we're watching this guy, the Man in Black, played by Ed Harris, who's going around brutally murdering everybody and being really terrifying, looking for this maze that is in the middle of the park. He says he's been going there for 30 years. So the theory is that William is the Man in Black, and that William's scenes take place 30 years before everything else that we're seeing. And rewatching it, it's actually, I think the show really strongly indicates in a lot of almost explicit ways that that's what's happening. So I would almost say that it's not a theory, like, having rewatched it. There's stuff like, for starters, there's really obvious stuff. The Westworld logo is different in William's scenes when he's dressing. It's just a different logo than the one that's showing, like, in all the present day scenes. There's the very beginning of the second episode, there's this weird voice talking to Dolores, and it's like, "Dolores, do you remember?" And then immediately it zooms in on her, and then it shows a reflection of his face, and he's asleep on the train, and it almost plays like a segue to a flashback. And then at the end of his first flashback, it actually cuts back to Dolores.
Hold on. I thought that "Dolores, do you remember" stuff was a throwback to the first episode where the other guy, the soldier dude, is talking to her.
Well, yeah, but there's it's not clear. The voice is like modulated, and it sounds like multiple people talking, and it's this voice that's telling her clearly, like, she's like, when she goes and digs up the gun, it's sort of not clear who the voice is. But regardless of like what that actually means, the segue says a lot, like that it says, "Do you remember?" And then it cuts to this like flashback segue to him sleeping on a train. And then we go through his whole introduction to the town. And at the end, he sees Dolores for the first time. And we go over to her in the past still. And she looks and sees herself in the mirror and like stares at herself in the mirror, or in a window, sorry, a reflection. And then it goes and it segues back to the present. And so it's like the whole thing is like encapsulated by these two reflections. It just really feels like that. And then also there's when he's walking down the main street, the guy who calls out, who's recruiting people to go fight in the Civil War instead of recruiting people to go fight the bandit, which indicates that it's like a different timeline.
This all makes sense. The only thing that makes me think that they might not do it is because I feel like it would be, it's confusing enough to have to like distinguish between the real world and Westworld, like adding another timeline on top of that.
I almost think it's so clearly telegraphed that they might reveal it very soon. Like, it might be in the next couple of episodes we find out who he is, like, which so I think would work well. And that actually will tell me a lot about how this show is going to be with secrets. If they telegraph it really clearly, because a ton of people have figured this theory out.
So you think that they're not going to spend a lot of time in the past?
And I hope not. I hope that they'll at least reveal what's going on.
Member.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they'll reveal who he is early on. We'll still get to see, because I believe what's going to happen is people think there's like a system failure 30 years before. So like, that is going to be maybe the thing that led him to become the Man in Black, maybe, or like the park went wrong, and there's more going on with his quest than we understand. And it could be that.
So the most interesting thing about the Men in Black, I think, is that they were. I was under the impression when I watched the show at first that he was the one who was causing all the malfunctions in the robots, mm-hmm. and that it was all a result of him and the fly, and like he was doing something to them. But then you see one scene where the operators, the developers of the game, are looking at him and talking mm-hmm. about him, and yeah. one of them is like, "Oh, he can do whatever he wants."
Yeah.
So it makes me feel like maybe he's not actually breaking the game. Maybe he's playing the game as he's.
It could be that, yeah, they designed a special game for him, and also, like, the sense I got from that, right, was, that was the thing, there's a theory that he is a host, that he's an android. I don't think that's, I hope that's not true,
because
they very clearly call him a guest. And
also, he got shot a few times and didn't die.
Well, that could be something. I mean, there could be some explanation for that, but I hope...
That would be the show breaking its own rules.
Right, I think that would be, exactly. And also, yeah, and that actually kind of tracks with the idea that maybe... He was the sole survivor of some horrible robot uprising that happened 30 years ago, and he's been basically given unlimited credit forever as like payment, and now he's this like kind of withered old guy who's been coming here forever and only kind of doesn't just totally sees the robots for what they are and doesn't feel anything for them and is looking for some deeper truth hidden within it. I don't know, like that mystery is kind of working for me, because as long as they're honestly planting the seeds for us to figure it out, which it feels like rewatching it, I was like, hey, this is very clearly telegraphed, then that's pretty cool. Like if they're in and they reveal it to us and then we get to kind of get new mysteries as we go, makes me look forward to, I'm really looking forward to the next episode. So
yeah, man, it's going to be good. I'm excited. It's a good show.
Yeah.
You know what else is a good show, by the way?
Oh, what?
Designated Survivor.
Is it really? I've seen people say that it's cheesy and good. I haven't watched it yet, but it's kind of corny.
Good. There are some corny parts, but Kiefer Sutherland is just such an incredible actor that he mm-hmm. just carries it all himself. Mm-hmm. It's basically like watching 24, except he's the president.
It's I'm incredible. Surprised that that Jack Bauer never actually became the president on 24.
He never wanted to. He didn't want to be in politics. He always just wanted to like shoot things and yeah. hang out with his daughter.
Right, that's basically, yeah, that's the character archetype for you.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, it's really good. It's really fun to watch. In the first episode, there's a scene where, like, he's kind of, it all happens very quickly. Like, the first scene is him finding out that the State of the Union was blown up and that everyone dies and he's the president. But very quickly, he's, like, thrown into all these crazy situations. And there's one scene in the first episode where he has to negotiate with the ambassador from Iran because they are moving troops along a border and the U.S., like, he has to negotiate. He has to get them to pull out or else they'll have to declare war on Iran and blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But basically, he's sitting down with the ambassador and he just gives him the Jack Bauer voice and he's like, you will do this. Like,
you don't know what I'm capable of.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's incredible.
Nice. Yeah, I will watch that at some point when I have time. I'll definitely check it out.
It's worth watching.
Nice.
But yeah, more Westworld. So I guess we should do an like a Westworld only episode at some point.
Yeah, maybe when the finale airs, we can do another TV show bonus episode. I have a feeling a lot of our listeners will watch that show. I think it's
going to... They should. I hope so. How many episodes are there?
I think there will be... I'm guessing 10, since most HBO shows have 10. So.
Okay. So it'll be a little while. Yeah, good fall show mm-hmm. to keep us entertained until Better Call Saul comes back.
Right.
And Game of Thrones and other stuff.
Yeah.
Cool.
I'm a fan.
All right. I think that's it for this week's episode.
Yeah.
I will not be here next week because I will be in Poland.
You have a fill-in, right? Yes.
Great. And then I will see you probably the week afterwards.
Yeah. And in the meantime, you're going to be in Poland. Have fun in Poland, man.
Yeah. It's supposed to be cold, but I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to exploring Warsaw and eating pierogies and...
Yeah.
Talking to game developers.
Nice. We'll
learning the
full,
entire game dev scene.
Exactly. We'll expect a full update on the state of game development in Poland in 2 weeks when you come back.
You will get it. You will get it. Unless I just stay in my hotel playing Dragon Quest Builders the whole time.
It's a possibility.
It's also very possible.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Good times, Kirk. It's good to be back. I will see you in a couple weeks.
All right. See ya.